This is Sherry Punjab Radio AM 600 Vancouver.
ਬੱਚੇ ਸਾਡੀ ਸਭ ਤੋਂ ਵੱਡੀ ਉਮੀਦ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਨੇ, ਸਾਡੀ ਅਗਲੀ ਪੀੜ੍ਹੀ ਸਾਡੀ ਸਭ ਤੋਂ ਵੱਡੀ ਉਮੀਦ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ। ਜੋ ਗਲਤੀਆਂ ਅਸੀਂ ਕੀਤੀਆਂ ਨੇ ਉਹ ਅਗਲੀ ਪੀੜ੍ਹੀ ਨਾ ਦੁਹਰਾਏ। ਇਸ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਅਸੀਂ ਕੀ ਕੰਟਰੀਬਿਊਟ ਕਰਕੇ ਜਾ ਰਹੇ ਹਾਂ, ਸਾਡੇ ਵੱਲੋਂ ਕੀ ਕੰਟਰੀਬਿਊਸ਼ਨ ਆ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਵੱਲ। ਜੇ ਅਸੀਂ ਬਿਹਤਰੀਨ ਪਰਵਰਿਸ਼ ਨਾਲ ਆਪਣੇ ਬੱਚਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਵੱਡਾ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ, ਇਹ ਸਾਡਾ ਸਭ ਤੋਂ ਵੱਡਾ ਕੰਟਰੀਬਿਊਸ਼ਨ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਲਈ। ਪਿਛਲੇ ਵੀਕਐਂਡ ਜਦ ਅਸੀਂ ਇਹ ਗੱਲ ਕਰ ਰਹੇ ਸੀ, ਅਸੀਂ ਗੱਲ ਕੀਤੀ ਸੀਗੀ ਜੀ ਸਾਇੰਟਿਫਿਕ ਵੇਜ਼ ਆਫ ਹੈਵਿੰਗ ਚਿਲਡਰਨ। ਜੇ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਨੈਚੁਰਲੀ ਕੰਸੀਵ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਰ ਸਕਦੇ, ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸਾਇੰਟਿਫਿਕਲੀ, ਹੁਣ ਕਾਫੀ ਹੋਪ ਹੈ, ਕਾਫੀ ਆਪਸ਼ਨਸ ਅਵੇਲੇਬਲ ਨੇ ਤੁਹਾਡੇ ਲਈ। ਸਾਇੰਸ ਦਾ ਕਿੰਨਾ ਵੱਡਾ ਰੋਲ ਹੈ ਸਾਡੀ ਫੈਮਿਲੀ ਪਲੈਨਿੰਗ ਵਿੱਚ, ਫੈਮਿਲੀ ਲਾਈਫ ਵਿੱਚ। ਸਾਇੰਸ ਇੱਕ ਤਰੀਕੇ ਦੀ ਉਮੀਦ ਲੈ ਕੇ ਆਈ ਆ ਸਾਡੇ ਲਈ। ਇੱਕ ਇਨਫਰਟੀਲਿਟੀ ਐਕਸਪਰਟ ਨਾਲ ਅਸੀਂ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਕਰਾਂਗੇ, ਅਸੀਂ ਡਾਕਟਰ ਗੈਰੀ ਨਖੂੜਾ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਕਰਾਂਗੇ। ਡਾਕਟਰ ਨਖੂੜਾ ਇੱਕ ਇਨਫਰਟੀਲਿਟੀ ਸਪੈਸ਼ਲਿਸਟ ਹੈਗੇ ਨੇ ਵੈਂਕੂਵਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ, ਅਤੇ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਅਸੀਂ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਕਰਾਂਗੇ। ਜੋ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸਵਾਲ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਪਿਛਲੇ ਵੀਕਐਂਡ ਪੁੱਛੇ ਸੀਗੇ, ਉਹੀ ਸਵਾਲ ਮੈਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਪੁੱਛਾਂਗੀ, ਅਤੇ ਉਹ ਆਪਣੀ ਨੌਲੇਜ ਸਾਡੇ ਨਾਲ ਸ਼ੇਅਰ ਕਰਨਗੇ। ਅਸੀਂ ਜਦ ਗੱਲ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਸਾਇੰਸ ਦੀ, ਤਰੱਕੀ ਦੀ, ਅਤੇ ਇਹ ਜਾਣ ਕੇ ਬੜੀ ਖੁਸ਼ੀ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਆ ਕਿ ਹੁਣ ਸਾਡੇ ਕੋਲ ਹੋਰ ਆਪਸ਼ਨਸ ਵੀ ਹੈਗੇ ਨੇ ਜਿਹਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਅਸੀਂ ਆਪਣਾ ਫੈਮਿਲੀ ਪਲੈਨਿੰਗ ਕਰ ਸਕਦੇ ਹਾਂ। ਪਰ ਇਹ ਆਪਸ਼ਨਸ ਕੀ ਨੇ, ਇਹਦੀ ਇਨ ਡੈਪਥ ਨੌਲੇਜ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਇੰਨੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੈਗੀ, ਅਤੇ ਇਸ ਕਰਕੇ ਡਾਕਟਰ ਗੈਰੀ ਨਖੂੜਾ ਸਾਡੇ ਨਾਲ ਜੁੜਨਗੇ, ਜੋ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਇਹਦੇ ਬਾਰੇ ਹੋਰ ਨੌਲੇਜ ਦੇਣਗੇ। ਹੈਲੋ ਡਾਕਟਰ ਨਖੂੜਾ, ਵੈਲਕਮ ਟੂ ਦ ਸ਼ੋਅ।
ਥੈਂਕ ਯੂ ਵੈਰੀ ਮੱਚ, ਥੈਂਕ ਯੂ ਫਾਰ ਹੈਵਿੰਗ ਮੀ।
Dr. Nakura, as I mentioned to you before earlier in our conversation, there are lots of questions we have for you today, and we are very excited for the knowledge you'll be passing on to us. So first of all, thank you for taking out your time on a weekend and talking to us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm happy to speak and share my knowledge.
Dr. Nakura, we have seen that science has brought a lot of hope into lives of a lot of people, especially when it comes to family planning, when it comes to having children, when it comes to carrying your family name forward. Can we start with a brief history of how science came in the picture when it comes to different options of having children?
Oh, sure. I think, you know, as a medical problem, infertility has been recognized for centuries, really. But the issues were usually blamed on the women, unfortunately.
Yes.
Until probably into the 20th century, where it was recognized that, you know, there's more to it than just that, and treatments became available. Probably in the middle of the 20th century, after around World War II, much of the treatments came from the veterinary world, actually. Saying is that some of the technologies that became available, such as artificial insemination, actually were translated from the veterinary world, from when we were trying to get animals pregnant on farms and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the late 60s, drugs became available. One of the most well-known is a drug called clomiphene, which has been used since 1965 to help women ovulate. And we still use that drug. It's a very important foundational drug. But really the modern era is ascribed to the advent of what was initially called the test tube baby. And the first child born is a famous baby, Louise Brown.
Yes.
She is now more than 40 years old, but her birthday was on July 25th, 1978. And that was the first successful IVF pregnancy from Nobel Prize winners, Dr. Robert Edwards and Steptoe in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly after that, throughout the 80s and the 90s and, you know, up to current day, the technology of IVF has just rapidly accelerated. So we've been, you know, it's one of the most interesting cutting edge fields in medicine because it's changing so quickly.
That's true. And you mentioned in the 60s is when drugs were being available to help out women ovulate, and they became accessible to the doctors and to the common public in around the 60s. Now, when we talk about different options that, you know, any clinic provides for families to have children, we think about egg freezing, we think about IVF, or even sometimes pre-implantation. So let's start with egg freezing. When we talk about egg freezing as an option for women, can you give us more details how this is done? The listeners of my show showed a lot of interest in it last weekend, so we would love to know a little bit more about it.
Sure, happy to. Egg freezing is one of the most exciting developments in the recent years. And it's a little bit different because when we're talking about egg freezing, we're talking about preserving your future fertility. It's called, fertility preservation versus most of the patients that we see already have infertility. So with egg freezing, we're being proactive, right? And the value of egg freezing is because we accept and we understand and recognize that with time, infertility will inevitably decline. Unfortunately, it happens much faster for women than it does for men. So by freezing eggs at a relatively young age, not only will you have more eggs to use in the future, but the quality of those eggs will be better, because that really is a fundamental issue that not everybody really appreciates or understands or gets how quickly it changes. I think everybody will understand that at some point in a woman's life, her fertility will stop. But I think these days, as we're all being healthier and we're exercising and, you know, we all feel healthier, we think that we're still fertile. But unfortunately, evolution has not caught up with that, right? Our fertility will decline no matter how healthy we are. That's just something that you cannot stop. So freezing eggs allows us to improve your chances of conceiving in the future. It's certainly most helpful if you freeze eggs at a younger age. Under 35 is what we recommend, but we've had successes with women who have frozen their eggs as old as 43.
Okay. And just a brief, brief, quick summary of how the process actually takes place.
For sure. So it's a bit involved, and so I'll simplify it. But the bottom line is, we, in order to get the eggs from the ovaries, we have to stimulate the patient with medications. These are hormone medications, primarily injections, right? And the idea is that we can only get how many eggs that your body makes available in any given month. So this is highly variable from woman. Again, pretty much of age.
Sorry, Dr. Nakuda, you were cutting off again.
Sure.
Could you repeat the last two sentences?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I was saying that we can predict the number of eggs we might be able to get with blood tests and ultrasounds.
Okay.
But it's highly variable from patient to patient, and we can only get what is available in any given month. So in order to get these eggs, we have to take these medications roughly for about 2 weeks. And during this time, you'll go into the fertility clinic for blood tests and for ultrasounds to see how the eggs are developing. Okay. And eventually we do a procedure to take the eggs out. We call that the egg retrieval. And in our clinic, we give some IV pain medication, some local anesthesia. It's really quite fast. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes per ovary. But we're essentially vacuuming the eggs out of the ovaries. And we know how many eggs we have immediately. Not all of these eggs are going to be mature and healthy, but the ones that are, we freeze them for the future. The freezing process, this is really the revolutionary technique that made egg freezing possible, and this really wasn't available until about 2012. It's called vitrification, and this is where we can rapidly freeze the eggs so that the water content inside doesn't crystallize, it doesn't damage the eggs, and then they are stored in liquid nitrogen, and they can be stored forever, theoretically. They don't change once they are frozen, and then you can come back at any time to use them. It doesn't matter if it's the next day or if it's in 10 years from now, the egg will always be as good as it is today.
So it's frozen in the state it is when you take them out, and that's how they will remain. That's why it's called egg freezing. That's how they will remain, and doesn't matter after how long you want to utilize them. So when you say, after how long you want to use them, now if, you know, a girl or a woman says that, okay, now I want to have children, so how does the process take place then? How do you utilize the frozen eggs?
Yeah, great question. So eventually, when the patient comes back and decides she wants to use her eggs, either with a partner or with a sperm donor, we will eventually thaw the eggs, and then we fertilize the eggs in the laboratory. So we take a single sperm for each egg and directly inject one sperm into each egg. And then we just essentially babysit. We watch these embryos develop. So the embryo is the fertilized egg. We watch them develop in the laboratory. And over the course of about 5 to 7 days, we'll see how many survive. The reason we always try to start with, you know, a good number of eggs, the ideal number is around 15, is because we know that most of the eggs, even in the healthiest of women, even in someone who's had children before, the majority of these eggs will not be healthy and they will not survive the stage of being an embryo. Mm. But just by watching them survive, it's survival of the fittest. And then after about a week after fertilization, we'll see how many of these embryos we have. At that point, we call them blastocysts. That's just the technical name for that stage of the embryo. And you alluded to the possibility of pre-implantation genetic testing. And just to kind of jump to that, the idea there is that when we look at the embryos under the microscope, we have a sense of how healthy they are to some degree. But just grading them by the appearance doesn't tell us the whole story. There's much more to it than meets the eye, right? So we can have a beautiful embryo under the microscope. We can say, hey, that's a lovely embryo, but it could still be genetically abnormal. It could be chromosomally abnormal. So the fundamental problem that affects the quality of the eggs as the female gets older is a problem called aneuploidy. And essentially all that means is that the embryo has the wrong number of chromosomes, right? So chromosomes are the structures inside our cells that hold our DNA, hold our genes. And humans, we all have to have 23 pairs of chromosomes to be considered what's healthy. But the basic biological problem is that as the eggs get older and they mature, they don't give the proper number of chromosomes to the embryo. I'm oversimplifying it, but this is the basic problem is that the eggs don't pass on the right number of chromosomes to the embryo, and that's why many of these miscarriage is this very simple. Their fundamental problem is that the embryo has the wrong number of chromosomes. Eventually, it'll start developing, and it will result in a miscarriage. Essentially, nature's way of making sure you don't have an unhealthy baby.
Right. Okay,
but we can test this in the embryo before we transfer it back to the patients. So it's a whole nother level of screening the embryos to help us select the healthiest embryo. And even still, there are other things that we cannot test, but that is a major hurdle. So that's a very a significant development, which has improved over the years and is still getting better.
I'm sure it is, and that brings me to my next question. This is a beautiful process, what you have described us, as I said before, with a lot of hope attached to it. However, I'm bound to ask, are there any side effects that you have seen in your experience from this process?
Yes, certainly there are. Any procedure comes with risks. Overall, it's a very safe process, but it also depends on the patient. There's various situations where there could be more risks involved and there could be more side effects and so forth. But in general, the main side effect that women experience is during the stimulation when they're taking the injections, their ovaries are going to be enlarged. Right, over the course of 2 weeks or so, they gradually enlarge, and then much more rapidly towards the last few days of taking these injections. to the point where the ovaries are about 2 to 3 times their normal size. So, you know, they can be quite large very quickly. So women experience a lot of bloating, right? There's only so much room in the belly, and these very big ovaries are pushing everything around. That can be very uncomfortable. We warn women not to exercise or do anything too active, because if these large ovaries are bouncing around, they can twist.
Awesome.
There's another situation which luckily is becoming more and more rare, but it's called hyperstimulation syndrome, and that is essentially the problem where the woman responds too well, makes too many eggs, or hormone levels get to be too high, and as a consequence of that, there's essentially the physiology is completely unbalanced. The woman will be retaining water, so her belly gets very bloated with water, but at the same time, the blood vessels are leaking all this fluid, so the blood is more concentrated, and in the very, very rare instances, you can develop blood clots, which can be very dangerous. But again, we're very good at preventing this. We recognize the patients that are at risk for this. So it's very rare to have what we call severe hyperstimulation, really less than 1% of all patients.
Right.
So those are the main short-term complications.
Mm-hmm. You know, we also notice, Dr. Nakura, that a lot of communities are very hesitant to talk about such issues. Nowadays, we do see such topics coming up, you know, on a radio show like ours, or there are movies being made on it. And I can definitely say that in the Indian community, there is very little conversation around such topics, out of hesitation, out of embarrassment, out of just being shy to open up about your personal life. So you being an expert in this, and you know, you have had so much experience in this, why do you think certain communities feel hesitant to talk about such things?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very important point. And, you know, it's certainly not limited to the Indian community. You know, even when people who would think of themselves as relatively progressive and modern and liberal still have issues speaking with this, just because, you know, fertility is a really sensitive and fundamental issue for us. It's related to sex, which, you know, we're not all comfortable speaking about. And it's very difficult for people to recognize and admit that they're having trouble conceiving, right? Because they've become very insecure, understandably, you know, because it's not a problem that everybody can relate to, right? To people who have no problem getting pregnant, they have a difficult time empathizing with the patients who this is a problem for. We really do believe that infertility is a medical problem, but not everybody will recognize that, right? Mm. So for those who have it or who've experienced it, you know, they feel alienated. They don't know who they can speak to. They probably feel like they're the only ones who are experiencing it when it's infertility. Maybe it's common, you know, figure six, really common. But I think when you are going through the experience personally, it's very difficult to talk about this openly because of, you know, what's perceived as either, you know, what have you, shame or, you know, other negative emotions surrounding it that just have been there for years and years.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And, you know, that brings us to my closing question, which is, how do we educate women or even, you know, other genders about how important it is to talk about this, especially if you want to stop the decline related to age of getting pregnant or the options women have of getting pregnant? So how do we make it an important topic? How do we make people realize this is important to talk about?
Yeah, I think that education is certainly the most important element, so we can, you know, remain proactive and cognizant about fertility. And I don't know if there's a simple solution other than doing, you know, good work like you're doing, Misha, and you know, putting the information out there on the air to a wider audience, helping people understand that, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of here, that there is, you know, help we can seek. I think it's about educating young women, you know, about what the changes that happen with age. You know, it's very difficult. This is one of the biggest issues that we have these days, is that, you know, on the bright side, young women are getting more educated now and, you know, pursuing higher education and careers and so forth. But as a consequence of that, you know, we're delaying fertility. This is a universal problem in, you know, all developed nations. And that's why fertility rates are declining, right? You know, we can certainly say it's not fair that you have to choose your career or your education versus fertility. Unfortunately, this is the biology that we're tied to right now. Mm-hmm. So techniques like egg freezing, at least, are starting to offer some hope. So that, you know, we can have more family planning options and you know, we can still pursue our educational and professional pursuits and hopefully still preserve a chance of having, you know, the family that we want in the future.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Nakuda, for coming on air today and sharing your knowledge with us. We really respect your time and thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Gary Nakuda specialized kar dene ji infertility treatment de vich, especially egg freezing, IVF de vich specialized kar dene.
This is Sherry Punjab Radio, AM 600, Vancouver.